to my podcast, Your Gut Health Puzzle Made Simple. I'm your host, Prajakta, and this podcast will help you uncover the root causes to your gut issues, help you heal and nurture your gut through the healing power of nutrition and healthy lifestyle modifications. I will be sharing quick and easy tips that you can implement right away to solve your gut health puzzle. Hey, welcome back to another episode. I'm a registered dietitian, founder and CEO of Right Nutrition Works, and I'm so glad you have joined me today. Hey, my friend. Welcome to today's episode where I will be discussing a condition that affects many individuals struggling with gut issues, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth or SIBO. I have been getting frequent requests about this topic from many people, and hence I decided to cover this topic today. In this episode, SIBO 101, I'm going to talk about the overview of this condition, signs and symptoms of SIBO, various conditions that are associated with SIBO, what are different tests available to diagnose SIBO, what are various strategies to treat SIBO, and the prevention plan. This episode is jam-packed with a lot of information. Please don't feel overwhelmed. The purpose of sharing the information is to educate you so you can take appropriate action to feel better. So, let's dive in. Small intestinal bacterial overgrowth is an accumulation of bacteria in the small intestine. The bacteria that normally live in the gastrointestinal tract abnormally overgrow in a location not meant for so many bacteria. The bacteria interfere with our normal digestion and absorption of food and are associated with damage to the lining or the membrane of the small intestine. This, of course, results in a condition called leaky gut. If you are not familiar with leaky gut and want to learn more about this condition, I have an entire episode on this topic. Please listen to the podcast episode called Is Leaky Gut a Real Thing? Which is released on January 4th, 2023. You must be wondering, what are the contributing factors for SIBO? Some of the most common factors include ongoing chronic stress, poor dietary choices, and a weakened immune system. Other factors that may contribute to SIBO include antibiotic use, gastrointestinal surgery, and motility disorders. Now let's see what happens in our body when someone is dealing with SIBO. As I just mentioned, SIBO is the overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine. These bacteria consume some of our food, which over time leads to deficiencies in the nutrients such as iron and B12, which can cause anemia or chronic low levels of ferritin. These bacteria consume food which is unable to be absorbed due to the damage to the small intestinal lining. This continues the overgrowth of these bacteria and it becomes a vicious cycle. After eating our food, these bacteria produce gas within our small intestine. The gas causes bloating, abdominal pain, excessive belching, constipation, diarrhea, or both. These are also common symptoms of IBS, and hence many times SIBO can be mistakenly diagnosed as IBS. They decrease proper fat absorption by deconjugating bile, which can lead to deficiencies of vitamins A and D and can result in fatty stools. Because there is damage in the small intestinal lining, larger food particles that are not able to be fully digested can enter into the bloodstream, which can lead to aggravated immune response. This can cause food allergies and food sensitivities. Bacteria themselves can also enter the bloodstream. Immune system reaction to bacteria and their cell walls can cause chronic fatigue and body aches and excess burden on the liver. The bacteria excrete acids, which may, in high amounts, lead to neurological and cognitive symptoms. If someone is dealing with SIBO, a person can experience a wide range of symptoms, such as bloating, gas, abdominal pain, diarrhea, and constipation. If left untreated, SIBO can lead to nutrient deficiencies and other more serious health conditions. If you suspect that you may have SIBO, there are some tests that can help diagnose this condition. However, unfortunately, there is no perfect test available yet. The small intestine is a hard place to get to. If we want to see or sample the small intestine, endoscopy only reaches into the top portion and colonoscopy only reaches into the end portion. The middle portion, which is substantial, I would say about 17 feet, is not accessible. And stool testing predominantly reflects the large intestine. Luckily, there are two non-invasive tests. First is SIBO breath test, and the second one is IBS blood test. The SIBO breath test measures the hydrogen and methane gas produced by bacteria in the small intestine that has diffused into the blood and then into lungs for expiration. Hydrogen and methane are the gases produced by bacteria and not by humans. Hydrogen sulfide gas also contributes to SIBO. The gases are graphed over 2 or 3 hours and compared with the baseline. People taking the test drink a sugar solution of lactulose or glucose after 1 day preparatory diet. The PrEP diet removes much of the food that would feed the bacteria, allowing for a clear reaction to the sugar drink. The test is performed either at home with a take-home kit or at a facility that has a breath testing machine, such as in the hospital or doctor's office or even in the clinic lab. It takes 1 to 3 hours in the morning after a 12-hour fast the night before and a special diet the day before. At-home kits may be obtained from various breath testing labs. I'm providing the list of labs and their phone numbers in my show notes, from where you can order the test kits to take a test at home. The IBS blood test measures antibodies against the bacterial toxin cytolethal distending toxin B and the small intestine nerve protein venusylin. It detects SIBO that developed after bacterial food poisoning through an autoimmune process. Food poisoning is thought to be the most common cause of SIBO and even IBS, and is also known as the traveler's diarrhea or stomach flu. When it comes to SIBO treatment, there are 3 different treatment strategies for SIBO. So let's dive into that. First is reduce the bacteria. The options include antibiotics, herbal antibiotics, elemental formula, and dietary treatments. Antibiotics are the first choice for most gastroenterologist. However, it must be followed with preventative measures. I'm going to talk about the preventative measures in a little bit in this episode. The primary antibiotics used are rifaximin and neomycin. They are almost completely non-absorbable, which means they stay in the intestines, having a local action and don't cause systemic side effects such as urinary tract infections. They are chosen specifically for this property, which allows them to act only where they are needed. Herbal antibiotics approach seeks to attack the bacterial overgrowth head on and fairly quickly with herbal antibiotics. It is the first choice for most of the naturopathic physicians and other naturally oriented practitioners. However, it also must be followed with the preventative measures. I use herbal antibiotics in my practice to help my clients control bacterial overgrowth. Numerous herbs demonstrate antibiotic activity, but as with any condition that antibiotics are used for, finding the right match and the dose is very crucial. Some of the herbal antibiotics that I use are neem, cinnamon, berberine, oregano, and allicin from garlic. The next option for reducing the bacterial overgrowth that I want to talk about is elemental formula. This approach seeks to starve the bacteria but feed the person by replacing meals for 2 weeks with an elemental formula. Elemental formulas are powdered nutrients in pre-digested, easily absorbed form. Elemental formulas contain protein as amino acids, carbohydrate as glucose or maltodextrin, fat as various oils, and vitamins and minerals. Many brands are available over the counter. I'm providing a list of commercial elemental formulas for your reference. Now, be sure to check the show notes for this. There are some advantages and there are some disadvantages of using elemental formulas. The advantages are its overall proven effectiveness, safety, and tolerability. These formulas are available in retail stores and online stores as well as through your doctors. This means they are easily accessible. Another advantage is it can reduce high gas levels in 1-2 week course, reducing the need for multiple rounds of antibiotics and herbal antibiotics. On the other hand, some of the disadvantages are that commercial elemental formulas can be very expensive. The commercial formulas can have high carbohydrate content and sugar percentage. When you are making these at home, you can control the sugar or carb content. Some people may lose weight while on elemental formulas if full calories are not consumed. Commercial formulas can have unpleasant taste if there are no flavorings added in it. All dietary treatments strive to reduce the food source for the bacteria. They seek to feed the person but starve the bacteria. Our diet has a significant impact on our intestinal bacterial population. Bacteria primarily eat carbohydrates, so all the recommended diets decrease carbohydrates to try to reduce the bacteria and especially the gas they produce by limiting their food supply. The only type of carbohydrate that bacteria do not eat much of is the insoluble fiber.
The dietary treatments for SIBO can be used as the main treatment for SIBO without antibiotics or other treatment. Diet alone may provide enough symptom-free relief. However, if malabsorption or leaky gut is present, other treatment is definitely recommended. Diet will likely be needed for long-term with this approach. Dietary treatments can be used in combination with antibiotics or herbal antibiotics for symptom relief and some added benefits. Dietary treatments can be used as a therapy to allow the damaged small intestinal lining to heal after eradication with antimicrobial treatment. The lining may need time to repair from the damage of SIBO before it can properly start digesting all the foods. Generally, 1 month is the recommendation for this purpose. Dietary treatments for SIBO can also be used as relapse prevention to stop the overgrowth from recurring. I will be talking about the main strategies about relapse prevention in a bit. If a specific dietary treatment is used as a relapse prevention strategy, then this diet can be more expanded. Please remember, in any type of dietary treatments, an individualized approach is extremely important. The established SIBO treatment diets are the specific carbohydrate diet, the gut and psychology syndrome diet, which is also called as GAPS diet, the low FODMAP diet, or a combination of these diets, which is specific carbohydrate diet and low FODMAP diet. Now, healing the lining of small intestine is very, very important, and in many cases, it occurs on its own with bacteria reduced and with a specific dietary management. In some cases, though, supplements are required to heal the small intestinal lining. Preventing the relapse of SIBO is also extremely important. SIBO is a disorder that relapses because bacterial eradication itself does not always correct the underlying causes. I'm going to share some strategies that can help prevent the SIBO relapse. Number one, stimulating the migrating motor complex. The migrating motor complex is a natural wave-like movement that occurs in the small intestine between meals, and this happens to all of us. It helps to clear out any bacteria that may have accumulated in the small intestine. Number two, avoiding the use of proton pump inhibitors or PPIs. PPIs are medications that are commonly used to reduce acid reflux symptoms. However, long-term use of PPI can lead to decreased stomach acid production, which can increase your risk of bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine. If you need to take PPI, it is important to speak with your healthcare provider about a plan to reduce or even discontinue the use of PPI. Number three, supporting and stimulating hydrochloric acid production in your stomach. Hydrochloric acid is produced in the stomach and it plays an important role in breaking down food and killing any bacteria that may be present. Low levels of hydrochloric acid can increase your risk of bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine. Strategies to support and stimulate hydrochloric acid production in this stomach can include consuming apple cider vinegar or lemon juice before meals. chewing your food thoroughly well and avoiding drinking large amounts of liquid with meals. Number 4. Promoting a healthy gut microbiome. A healthy gut microbiome can help prevent bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine. Strategies to promote a healthy gut microbiome can include consuming a variety of fiber-rich foods such as variety of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, and lentils, and incorporating fermented foods in your diet every single day. Some of the examples of fermented foods are kefir, sauerkraut, or yogurt. SIBO is a kind of a complex condition, and I would recommend working with a healthcare professional to determine the best approach for your individual needs. All right, my friend, I hope you enjoyed the information that I shared with you in this episode today. My podcast is all about helping you solve your gut health puzzle. If you are struggling with gut issues and if you are unsure how to start your gut healing journey, I have a great free resource for you. I have a guide called Fix Your Gut that you can download. Go to rightnutritionworks.com/fixyourgut free guide and download your free copy today. This guide gives you the step-by-step framework to start your gut healing journey on the right track. Have a wonderful day, my friend, and I will see you again next week. Bye for now.